You've crushed it. You've made millions. But let us ask you something. If you stop working today, how long would it all last? For most people, that answer, it's not great.
Right now, everything you have built, your house, your car, the vacations you love, relies on you. If you stop, the money stops.
That's exactly why we created a community for people just like you. No fluff, no hustle or energy, just real self-made millionaires helping each other create wealth that actually lasts.
Ready to build a legacy? Join us now at join.builtbeyondme.com and take the first step towards lasting wealth.
Imagine this, no more grinding for another 10, 15, or 20 years just to keep everything afloat. What if your wealth could start working harder than you do?
In our community, we'll show you how to invest in income-producing assets like multifamily properties and build-to-rent developments. No messy tenant management, no complicated learning curve, just real scalable wealth.
It's not about making millions anymore. It's about keeping it, growing it, and passing wealth beyond you.
Don't just make millions, make them last. Build a future, build freedom. Join our community now at join.wealthbeyondme.com. And that is join.wealthbeyondme.com.
Today, we're talking about the secret playbook Wall Street uses to raise billions, if not trillions of dollars. If you want to raise more money to fund your businesses, ours is multifamily apartments, you need to learn what the experts are doing. In this video, I'm going to walk you through three main ways that Wall Street employs to raise billions when they don't go the IPO route. After watching this video, I guarantee you that you will be thinking differently about ways to raise capital. By the way, I'm Palmy, the other half of the Kitty Sisters. With a multifamily real estate portfolio of over $300 million, we've successfully raised over $130 million in just 6 years. And I think about this stuff all the time. I'm quite obsessed about it, you can say.
Hello, I'm Palmy.
And I'm Nancy.
Together we make the Kitty Sisters. We're apartment syndicators, entrepreneurs, and educators with big dreams and a $300 million multifamily apartment portfolio.
We're into helping successful entrepreneurs and founders who have a passion for real estate and $100K to $5 million to invest, all aiming to turn their business profits into a lasting legacy through income-producing asset investment.
This is Cashflow Multipliers, a podcast dedicated to your financial freedom and the lifestyle you deserve.
But before I show you about how all this works, let me be clear about something. And this is a critical disclaimer that you guys all need to know. I am not an attorney and I don't play one on TV. So nothing in this video can be construed as legal advice. These are some of the best practices that we've learned from our SEC attorneys, our own experience, but definitely consult with your legal professionals before raising any money. Getting this wrong can destroy your business and potentially land you in serious legal trouble. Let me give you a really quick personal story as how I discovered this strategy. A couple years ago, when I first got started in multifamily apartments, I found this property that was amazing and I really wanted to buy it. And so we joined forces with a couple of us to take down this $176 unit property in Phoenix, Arizona. It was a great location, up and coming area. Rents were a low market. The seller held it for like 17 years. So rent was definitely below market. It was $6+ million in purchase price. And our goal was to double the money in about 3 to 5 years. In fact, we actually, in reality, did it triple that in 27 months. But that's for another video. But there was this one problem. As I was brand new to this business, I hit a major roadblock. I couldn't raise the money. I did everything I could. I called the friends I had, family member. I reached out to people I knew. And basically, it felt like I was begging for investment money to come in. And none of that worked. And anyone who's tried to raise money that way can feel the pain and anxiety. You have a lot of pressure on the line. There's a finite amount of time that you have in order to raise this money, typically around 30 to 60 days. And if you don't perform, you're pretty much dead in the waters. This is still, the market is still such that you screw up once, you screw up your reputation. Completing a deal is so important to the brokers and the sellers that it's basically your reputation. If you do this correctly, you will be able to do business with these people over and over again. So what happened? How did it all change? So what happened was I was having coffee with a friend who actually works for a large bank in the country. And I was telling her about the distress that I'm having. And like, man, this is not working at all. And then she started laughing at me. I was like, why are you laughing? This is like a serious thing. She said, you know, you're trying to raise money like it's 1985. And she was like, Wall Street, they don't raise money like this anymore. And that's when everything changed. And she broke down how capital raising actually happens. And these weren't just random strategies. These were specific frameworks that are regulated by the Securities and Exchange Commission. And that's something that most investors and even us at the time really had no information about. We really didn't understand very much. So today, what we're going to do is we're going to break down the three main regulations that Wall Street used to raise billions, if not trillions of dollars. Fairly simple, but they have uniqueness into them that makes it so that you have to pick which one makes sense for you. So the first one we're going to dive into is what I call door number one, which is Regulation D, or sometimes it's called Reg D. So this first door, Reg D or Regulation D, is what we call the accredited investor playbook. So this has been around since the 1980s, and it's what most real estate syndicators use. So that's people like us. But before we get into the specifics of that, let me really quickly break down what is an accredited investor for those of you guys who aren't new to that. An accredited investor is someone who meets the following criteria. So either they earn an annual income of at least $200,000 or $300,000 combined if they're filed as a married couple, a spouse, for the past 2 years. Well, this expectation is that they're going to earn, with the expectation that this current year, they're going to earn that much, if not more. So two prior years, they have to make at least $200,000 individually. If they file taxes as jointly, then it's $300,000. Or they have a net worth that exceeds $1 million, which does not include the value of their primary residence. So this could include any other assets they have, even other real estate holdings, just not their primary residence. And the other criteria is, and it meets one of these. So the other one is holds a professional certification or license, such as a Series 7, Series 65, or Series 82. So you can think of Regulation D like running two different type of restaurants. There's two subsets underneath this. So Regulation Rule 506B, B like boy. So this is, think of it like a private dinner. So you get an invite, it's invite only, you can't access it anyway. You can just walk up to the door and join the dinner. For this kind of investment, you're allowed to include up to 35 non-accredited investors, regular folks, sometimes they're also called sophisticated investors. And you're allowed to have unlimited amount of accredited investors. These are wealthy individuals, again, which meets the above criteria. Either they made $200,000 in the last 2 years, $300,000 combined. They have a net worth exceeding $1 million, not including the primary residence, or they have some sort of professional certification or license. So you can have unlimited amount of these individuals. And as we progress in our real estate career, what we've noticed is at the beginning, when we were raising, when we had a lower minimum, smaller deals, and we had a smaller group of people that we knew, our investment was a mixture of a lot of sophisticated and some accredited investors. And now keep in mind, you're only raising a couple $1 million. So we didn't need a larger group of people. Fast forward to today, where we raise $30+ million. Our last multifamily apartment deal that we purchased, we raised $39.4 million. And we didn't even hit that 35 non-accredited investor or sophisticated investor allotment. In fact, I think we had probably like less than 20. That means that of the 400+ investors we had, there's very few that were actually less than 10%, like around 5% were from the sophisticated investor pool. Another interesting tidbit is that a couple of investors who were sophisticated in the past, given their net worth have grown because of their multifamily investments, have actually transferred into becoming an accredited investor. This is an important point because when I talk to a lot of newer investors to multifamily, the first thing they'll ask me is like, hey, Pommy, I'm not an accredited investor. Do I still have access to your investment opportunities? And we'll get into that in a little bit later, but basically like the answer is yes, because typically we do our investment through 506B. So what this means is that, again, you can take up to 35 non-accredited or sophisticated investors, but you can have unlimited amount of accredited investors inside your investment under 506B. You can't advertise, that's the thing, right? Private dinner. You can't advertise, you can't post on Facebook about this. You can't have YouTube videos specifically talking about that investment. This is all spread through word of mouth from people you already know, who already have pre-existing relationship with you. So accredited investors under 506B, they self-certify. So they certify their status. They say, hey, yes, I do meet one of these criterias. And that means that they simply just confirm their income or their net worth. And you don't really need them to have a third-party proof up front. Guys, like what I just talked about 506B and accredited versus sophisticated investors, for the past 6 years, since we've launched our investment firm, we've operated under this rule, 506B. Why? Because we know people who invest with people they know, like, and trust. And because we were new to multifamily, having that trust factor was critical. So our investment slots filled up quickly because of this trust factor that we built over the years. If you're an accredited investor and you're ready to take that leap with us, you might be interested in considering to join our Kitty Freedom Club, which is our only club that accepts pre-existing relationship that we already have. So you definitely need to sign up and have a phone call with us in order to even qualify for the club if it makes sense from both of us to get into it. So it's ideal for the people who are fed up with the traditional time for dollars, sick of assets that are only draining your wallets, or over the hassle of having to be a landlord. At the Kitty Freedom Club, we do all the heavy lifting, from identifying prime investments with solid returns to also handling the most frustrating part of the business. We also handle most of the funding and obviously managing the properties. This way you can grow your wealth while truly living your life that you desire. So if you think that this makes sense for you, that you don't want to do the heavy lifting, check out our Kitty Freedom Club. There's a massive waiting list. The link is also in the description, but I can give it to you now. It's kittysisters.com/Kitty Freedom Club. kittysisters.com/Kitty Freedom Club. Okay. So far we've talked about the private dinner, aka 506B. Be like boy. Now let's talk about its sister under the regulation D, which is 506C, C like cat. So how is it different? So 506C, this is like a public restaurant, like a regular restaurant that has a huge neon sign. So in this case, you can advertise everywhere. You can do it on social media. You can have Google ads. You can have YouTube videos. You can even have newspaper prints if you really wanted to go old school route. But here's the caveat. You can only take accredited investors. So that 35 allotment of sophisticated investors, they're not allowed. Plus, you need to verify their status through third party. So there's a couple ways this can be done. Usually it involves the tax returns, W-2s, broker statements, or some sort of letter from their CPA. And this is basically stating, hey, I certify that they meet the criteria. It feels intrusive sometimes, and some CPAs are reluctant to even fill them out. So it may take a little bit of time. There's a website that does it for you fairly inexpensively. So you can check out those websites that does it. The first time you invest is a funny story. I was so excited. So I knew that we had to be verified. Prior to the webinar, I was so excited and I was afraid that if I didn't get verified in time, they wouldn't take my money. So I was like, I paid for expedited to the website, and I told them like, look, can you do this ahead of time so that I have that letter in hand? I got the letter, wasn't necessary, but at the time I was very, very eager. And I know a lot of people are as well. Again, with 506C, I think in general, you need to have a presence already. The people have to actually know who you are. If you're not someone who quote unquote is famous or have some notoriety, it'll be hard for new people to do 506C. And I think like that is something to consider. Like I said, from the beginning, we've always done 506B. We haven't even done 506C. Not yet, but we have set it up. So let me explain to you a cool hybrid. In the last few years, we were introduced to this interesting concept where you can do a hybrid between 506B and 506C. With 506B, what you can do is, again, take 35 sophisticated investors and unlimited amount of accredited investor. Now, if for any given reason, if we were not able to fill the investment, we wanted to give ourselves some leeway, some ability to then go to the public restaurant, per se, to raise additional funds. Now, thank goodness our funds always, our raises fill up really quickly, and we've never actually have to transition, but we could have. The transition, how would it look? Let me explain to you quickly. So what it would look like is we would basically shut down 506B. We cannot take any more money from sophisticated investors. And then we would transition to having a new class of investors, probably called like Class B. And then now we can only take money from accredited investors. So that's kind of like the transition. You'd have to have a very clean break, but it's not hard to do. It costs a little bit more money. And for people who want to at least have like the ability to publicize their investment while the deal hasn't closed, that may be an opportunity that you want to consider. And this allows you to post on Facebook, et cetera. A lot of times, a lot of the posts that we see on Facebook, on Instagram, honestly, based on our lawyer's feedback, basically violate the law, right? It's not allowed. You're not allowed to do those type of statements. But a lot of people do it. And then some of them will face the consequences of that. So let me break down a little bit of that time frame setting this stuff up. So with both 506C and 506B, it takes about a month or two. And this is the part that you cannot rush, because there are specific things that need languages that needs to be present, and these things that have to be very important. Like even recently, every time we do our own offering, what we find is that there's small tweaks that we want to add and enhance to our investment. from one deal to the next, or maybe things like, oh, we caught it. Like, yeah, nah, I wish I had included this. And literally, we just talked to our SEC attorney yesterday. And going forward, there's one thing that we're going to add to our operating agreement that we had not done previously. And also, the thing to consider is also that if you use the same attorney, there may be some consistency. So there may be some language that you can borrow from previous apartment deals or multifamily deals or any purchases or raise, capital raise that you've done. We've done that before in some instances. It helps. When there was a time when we had two properties that we were purchasing back to back within 3 months of each other. And in order to expedite the closing, because it was close to the holidays, we said, hey, SEC attorney, can we just basically use the same language and now just put it to this property? It expedited things a couple weeks, but it wasn't like, it wasn't super, super fast. Now, normally you have about 60 days to close on these properties. So you're going to waste 2 or 3 weeks going back and forth, getting these documents done. By the time you set it up, you only have maybe 20, 30 days to complete the raise. So time is ticking. Ideally, you want to have all your subscription documents set up and ready to go before you do your webinar that you're announcing, you're presenting your investment opportunity. There's been a couple instances where that hasn't happened for us. Luckily, it didn't backfire, but it's better to have it ahead of time. Okay, so let's go through some of the pros and cons of 506B and 506C. Pro of 506B, obviously, it's easier for an investor to onboard because it's self-certification for accredited investors. You have the opportunity to broaden your pool of investors because now you can take 35 non-accredited investors or sophisticated investors. You have already developed strong relationship with these investors because they've come in your network. So technically, it probably should be easier for you to discuss new opportunities with them. They've had experience working with you. Some of the cons is no advertising allowed. So this is like where some people get frustrated. Depending on your SEC attorney, they may help review some of your posts ahead of time. Ours does. So if we have a specific post that we want to have and there is some questionable language or we want to just clear things up just to make sure that it's kosher, we send it to them and they'll give us their feedback on that. Typically, as a rule of thumb, attorneys are going to be way more conservative. So we'll take that with a grain of salt. So pros of 506C, you can advertise publicly, right? 506C, you can advertise publicly and maybe that'll help attract new investors. The good thing about 506C is like if you, and I mean, this is a hypothetical, it's never happened, but like you're walking down the street, you went to a coffee shop and you ran into a person at the coffee line. They're like, what do you do? Oh, I do real estate, I do multifamily. Like, oh, I've been looking to invest in multifamily. Can I invest in your deal? That hypothetical, if you do 506C, that's allowed. Cannot do that with 506B. So con of 506C is it's only accredited investors that you have to take in and they must do third-party verification. That can delay the investment, deter people from participating. Again, it reduces by 35 people. For our experience, the longer you're in this game, the more likely that you'll have 90%+ are going to be accredited investors anyway. So it's not going to be that onerous for you to do that. 506C, I think, is the path as you grow, become more known in the business. As far as documentation, it requires subscription documents and PPM, which is private placement memorandum. So this is where like the difference between the public and the private market just needs to be explained a little bit. So in the past, and you can notice there's a lot less IPO companies lately, and they've actually gone the private market route. And we'll go into like how they potentially raise money and cash out per se. So in this case, like right now, there's less and less companies going public, and they choose to go private for various reasons. They want more control. They want to make sure that the pricing is correct, all that good stuff. So with 506B and 506C, the documentation requires private placement memorandum, PPM. This discloses the risk, the terms of the investments, and the subscription doc, which is basically the investment doc that serves as a contract between the operators, the people who are presenting the deal, who's going to purchase the property, who's going to operate it, and the investors. So these legal documents are so critical to protecting you and your investors, and they show you how serious you are and how professional you are. Large private equity firms, hedge funds, they all raise money this way. So Blackstone, one of the largest alternative investment firms in the world, probably the largest, they primarily use Regulation D for their private equity and real estate funds. So they leverage 506B from offering for longstanding investors that they have extremely good relationship with, and then use 506C when they're expanding their reach to groups that they may not have had previous relationship with through marketing campaigns. So some of the best practices, again, this is from our SEC attorneys. So definitely consult yours before you try to raise any money this way. Do document pre-existing relationship when you're doing 506B investors. So important. I recommend having a CRM system, customer relationship management software, where every time you talk to them, you document date, time, and get specifics about your conversation so that in the future, someone can come and say, hey, you solicited me. You sent me a notice about a deal that you're raising money for without having a pre-existing relationship. How I know about this and how critical this was, there was a time a couple years ago that we were raising money for a deal. And the person who, it was actually one of my partners. So, but I was CC'd on it. So basically the person that received the email was offended, emailed us back and said, how dare you send this email to us? Where we've never met or something like that. And then like my partner's like, that's not true. Here's the 3 times that we've spoken. We spoke about actually doing deals together, blah, blah, blah. So in instances when they forget, when the person receiving the email forgets that you actually have had previous conversations, it's good to have those documents. And by the way, like you need to take them off your list. And that kind of person you don't want on your list anyway, right? If they're not going to be serious about building a relationship and you're going to have a I don't see any good coming from that. So document pre-existing relationship, super important. Don't try to rely on your memory, because when you talk to hundreds of thousands of investors at some point in time, you're not going to remember all the details. While you try to do your best, and I take pride in remembering a lot of the information about most of my investors, but I'm human. I can only remember so many things. Okay, the next do is verify a credit status rigorously for 506C investors. So don't take this for granted that you don't have to take it seriously. Again, third-party verification is 100% must. It has to come to a CPA or like a verification firm, which technically is from the CPA anyway, a CPA that goes through the tax returns and reviews it. Another do is file your Form D with the SEC promptly after accepting investments. This is something your SEC attorney handles, so you don't have to deal with it. Basically, it'll gives SEC a list of the investors in the deal. Should something happen, they already have access to the entire group of people who invest in this deal. Again, keep in mind, this is a private offering, so you may not know who else is investing in the deal. Do work with experienced attorneys to draft the PPM and subscription docs. Do not try to take let's say you invested past the end deal and now like, okay, now try to save a couple bucks and take that and try to, you know, use ChatGPT or something to try to create your own. This is something very, very important. So make sure that you have it completely done by an SEC attorney that's reputable. Another do is make sure that all marketing materials are in compliance with SEC guidelines. Avoid exaggerating returns, promises, or guarantees. So important. A lot of people, and even like when they're doing just regular marketing online for stuff, coaching program, products, whatever it is, sometimes they maybe unintentionally over-exaggerate potential or the potency or the product's ability, the returns, et cetera. And I always tell people, like, if I see my friend write something like that, I'll always message and I'll DM and say, okay, I'm not an attorney, but I think you should be careful with the language you're using. Okay, so what are some of the don'ts? Don't advertise under 506B at all. Make sure that aside from the investment list of people that you've had a pre-existing relationship with, no one else should know that you're doing this deal. No one should have any information about the specific of the deal. You can say to people generally, I'm raising money. Don't tell them the property name. Don't tell them the returns. Don't tell them the location. Don't give them anything so that they have no ability to connect the dots. Okay. So very important. No advertising. Do not combine advertising with non-accredited investor list. So this is just basically when I told you about the hybrid, you have to split that, make clear separation. Again, never make broad claims or guarantees. There's never any guarantee in investments. Any promise returns or risk-free investing can land you in serious legal trouble. So be very careful about that. On the investor relations side, once you've raised the capital, the work doesn't stop there. You are required to have ongoing communication with your investors. This is really crucial because regular updates, financial statements, performance reports build that trust and transparency. So investors feel informed and they know what's happening and they're more likely to reinvest in the future and also bring on referrals as well. And this is so important, not just when things are good. When things are good, it's easy to write really awesome reports. When things aren't going right, which it happens from time to time on any deal in any business. You have to come forward, be transparent, explain what's happening, explain how you're going to remedy the situation, and go from there. And from then on, regularly update your investors so that they build trust. I've spoken many times to investors who say, like, hey, guys, I just appreciate how honest and open you are and how transparent you are with the entire process. And that's something that we strive on being. Okay, that was door number one. So that's door number one. That's extensive. I think it's a really good start for people who are getting started in raising capital for businesses, for real estate whatsoever. Like we've done it for 6 years. We've had friends who have done it for billions of dollars that they've raised. So this is something that I tried and true. You can stick with this. No harm in doing this forever if you really want to. Okay, so, but there are a couple alternatives that we want to talk about. So door number two is what they call Reg A. Reg A, when I first started in real estate, so Reg A, the biggest difference between Reg A and Reg D is this is what they call a mini IPO. So it allows you to raise a maximum of $75 million from anyone. It doesn't have to be even wealthy or accredited investors. Be your neighbors, your hairdresser, whoever you find on Instagram, all investors. So there's two tiers to this. Tier number one, you're able to raise up to $20 million, but you need approval from both the SEC and every state where you have an investor. So this is cumbersome, right? Because we have investors from around the country, from Hawaii to Alaska to Florida to New York, New Jersey. I don't think we have any from Maine. Probably like not the Dakotas, but Idaho, you know, like Utah, everywhere. You have investors all across the country. So therefore, that can be cumbersome. The tier two of Regulation A is it allows you to raise up to $75 million and you only have to get SEC approval. And this is why tier two becomes more popular. And you can think of this as like Tai Lopez or Grant Cardone, where they're raising money. And Grant Cardone has raised like hundreds of millions of dollars for his real estate deals this way. And, you know, if he can tell people on his social media, hey, come invest as little as maybe $5,000, where our minimum is $100,000. I can speak to my own preference in terms of like the quality of investors. I have never raised $5,000 from anyone, but I've raised millions of dollars from individual investors. And I believe that there is merit to the fact that the higher the raise, the more sophisticated the person is in terms of understanding finances, understanding risk and returns and rewards. But also they have the money to lose. I don't plan on losing anyone's money. But think about this. If someone's investing $5,000, could that mean that $5,000 is either going to their kids' college education or your fund, or part of that's going to the down payment for their new house that they're renting. So you can see why if you raise money from someone who has $100,000, they're probably more well off, well-to-do, $100,000, $200,000, et cetera, where any delays or risk or challenges on the property is not going to financially jeopardize them. So that's my personal preference. There's obviously people who've done it successfully. So for us, I would prefer to have a smaller number of investors who bring in bigger dollars. We first started our first few deals. We did $50,000 as our minimum. And guys, for those who are new to raising money, I promise you raising 100, and then we raised our minimum to 75. But I promise you that raising 75 or 100,000 or 200,000 or 500,000 from one person is so much easier to do than you think, okay? Because these people already have that sort of, first they have the money. Second, they already have the expectation that this is par for the course. This is what it takes. So for me, if not for anything else, do Reg D, so knowing that you can raise a lot of money, okay? So Reg A, yeah, you can raise as little as $5,000, et cetera, smaller amounts, but it's become way more expensive. Legal fees, audits, marketing, investment platform, et cetera, expect to pay like $250,000 to $500,000. Sometimes I've heard even $1 million to get this stuff done. Where when you do 506B, 506C, Reg D, that may cost anywhere between like $20,000 to $35,000, depending on who you go with. Somewhere in between there. Way less, right? So unless you're trying to raise big dollars from a whole bunch of people, like tens of thousands of people, don't do Reg A. Time frame of setup is anywhere between 6 months and 12 months. Some of the best practices is make sure that you do ensure that audits of financials are done early and ready to go. Do budget for ongoing compliance costs. Don't underestimate marketing expenses. And don't make any broad claims. This goes for any investment, but good practice to have, especially because you're raising money from people who may have less financial support if something happens to the deal. Okay, so that's door number two. So we've gone through two doors. Now the final door. This is called Regulation CF. So this final door is Regulation Crowdfunding, or CF. Think of this as like Kickstarter, but for investments. So you raise up to $5 million from anyone, but it has to go through a registered portal like VFunder, Seed Invest, Realty Mogul. Fundrise nailed this model, one of the first that came on board, and they've been very successful with this. And they raise over $1 billion by letting regular people invest in real estate as little as $500. Again, I have a preference there. Can't speak specifically about a portal and their requirements, but what I saw is that, just speaking in general, what I noticed is that the requirement for them to take on someone as a sponsor or an operator can become onerous. I remember a couple that I spoke to said you have to have 10-year experience, and a lot of people don't have 10-year experience. And so therefore, they can hit a brick wall. And, you know, think conversely, if you have more than 10 years experience, why do you not have enough of an investor list to do your own deal? Why do you need to resort to a crowdfunding? Because when you do crowdfunding, you have to take them on as partner in the deal, because there's some sort of a trick about how they get compensated. That's too much details, but basically they have to become a partner in part of your deal in order to get compensated. So it makes it more challenging. Otherwise, they have a hard time collecting money because they make money when people invest through their portal, but there's no transaction that happened. It's not like eBay where you're putting in a credit card. You're wiring money directly to the fund, and if they don't have access to that, it's difficult for them to get to recoup the cost that they are promised. So it becomes a little bit more difficult. For me, I don't see the benefit of doing this route if you're able to raise money. So if you're comfortable with the amount of money you can raise, this is not a necessary option, in my opinion. Regulation CF is designed to, in the totality of it, it's designed to democratize investing. So it allows non-accredited investors to participate in private deals. Remember, private versus public deals. This is a private market. However, there's rules and limitations for this. So you must raise money through an SEC registered portal or broker dealer. I mentioned a couple earlier. There are limits on how much an individual can invest based on their income and net worth. The issuer must provide financial statements and ongoing disclosures. But again, beyond that, I think raising $500, $1,000, it's cool for the person investing because they feel like they get to participate in these large multifamily deals. But even with them, it's not going to move the needle very much. And on your side, the paperwork becomes like way more, because instead of having 400 people plus for almost $40 million, you may have, if you did like $500, $1,000 or $5,000, oh my God, you're going to have way more people that you have to manage all the tax documents for. The setup time for Regulation CF is around 2 to 4 months. Pro access a broad pool of daily investors everywhere. Lower initial legal compliance costs compared to Reg A. Allows for community-driven investments where you can build brand loyalty through their platforms. The con is you can only raise $5 million from one person in a 12-month period. Requires working with funding portal, which takes a percentage of the fundraise, typically 5-7%. And that's where it's like, that's a big chunk. Public disclosures can be burdensome for smaller companies. So unless you're big enough to support that, it may not work. Some of the best practices are, do choose a reputable funding portal with a track record of success. Just because you list on a portal doesn't mean someone's going to come. It requires marketing. It requires also attracting investors to that portal and attracting people to your deal on that portal. So it can become like a needle in a haystack. Like if you're hypothetically, if it looked and felt like Amazon, and Amazon in 2005, 2010, maybe there's one or two people or 10 people competing for that one product, like a floatable boat, a dinghy, right? But today, I bet there's like thousands of people. So you may drown in a sea of all these operators and no one will actually get to see you. Do make sure your financial statement and disclosure are accurate and transparent. Do engage with your investors regularly. This audience value transparency and community, but also because it's through a third party, you don't lack that tightness that happens. Like for me, I feel like when you do 506B, you have a true relationship with the people that's investing with you. They can feel it and you know it. So therefore, they can feel more assured that you have their best interest in mind. When you're doing it through these portals, no one knows who you are. They don't know what's happening. They can't say, oh, this is Mickey from DC. This is his sister. I know his mom. I know his spouse. Like, this is what they like to eat, all that stuff, right? Like, you don't have that. You don't have that personal touch. So again, like companies like Fundrise, Realty Mogul, they built their entire platform on this. And so everyday investors, they get access to these large scale investments that we do, right? Without investing the kind of dollars that typically is required. Again, people getting started, to me, the minimum is not a barrier. It's your mind that's the barrier. So if you think $500,000 is hard to raise, it will be hard to raise. But if you think that you're actually increasing the sophistication of the person you're bringing in the deal, that they'll actually understand your investment, and you don't have to go into like days and hours of trying to explain to someone what you're doing, I think it's an easier way to actually go about it. Okay. So let me give you some final thoughts on this. Choosing the right capital raising strategy can be the difference between your deal getting funded or falling apart. So it's so important. Unfortunately, you can't just pick Reg D, jump to, you can, but it's, you probably won't have enough time. Like, you can't go Reg D, then, you know, I'm going to jump to Reg CF, blah, blah, blah. It's hard. You can't get through those things as quickly. None of these options are fail-safe. There's unique challenges, pros and cons with each. They have their own requirements, costs, and timelines. So you have to understand the nuance and pick the right path for your specific situation. Sometimes you can combine some of the strategy, like told you about the hybrid with 506B and 506C. And those can be like powerful moves that you can use. These have been strategies that Wall Street has held secret for decades, and now they're available to you. So whether you're raising $500,000 for your first multifamily deal or $50 million for a large development, these tools can unlock the capital that you need and get unlimited funding that you've been looking for. Just remember, capital raising isn't just about collecting the wire transfers or the, you know, virtual check. It's about building long-term relationships based on trust, transparency, and compliance. Super important. Investors are trusting you with their hard-earned money, and your reputation is your most valuable asset. So guys, which door are you going to open first? Okay, so that's it for this one. If you like this episode and got some value from it, I host a free community for accredited investors, high-level entrepreneurs, business owners, and founders. It's called Wealth Beyond Me. It's all about creating wealth that lasts beyond you. If you're looking to elevate your wealth game, you should be in there.
We can't wait to begin this journey with you. Check us out at thekittysisters.com/podcast.